Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Also, the Instagram page, which you're perhaps watching this live on, which is youtube.com/redrockfantasybasketballpodcast. And if that link doesn't work, which I hope it does, you can find the links on my Twitter bio and on the website to check out the YouTube channel. Get across there and subscribe to it, like the links, comment on the videos, all that sort of stuff is always very helpful in helping to grow the podcast. Today's podcast, what I thought I would cover mainly is, as you can see by the title, is who is going to be the next breakout player. Now, obviously, I don't have a crystal ball. I'm guessing, I'm trying to predict, and I don't know for sure. Nobody knows for sure, but I'm going to go through some names of some guys who I think are going to be in a pretty good situation to become that player like Jimmy Butler, who went from a player who was drafted in the 80s or 90s and ended up being a top 30 sort of player, or a Draymond Green who was undrafted and ended up inside the top 40. And when I look at those sort of things, I target a few specific areas. Before I get into that though, you guys sent through a number of questions today, not all related to this. So I'm going to answer the question straight away now. Aiden Tandy on Facebook asked me, he says, you probably covered it before, but can you discuss the auction versus snake pros and cons, fairness and logistics? Okay, fairness, auction is fairer. There's no two ways about it. You're drafting in a snake draft. Generally, if you're drafting at the top of the draft, in general, you're going to have more likelihood of finishing in the playoffs. That's just the way it goes. Auction draft, everybody gets a crack at every player. It sorts out people who are prepared versus people who are unprepared. It's the best way to do it. Now, the con of doing an auction draft is it takes longer. It takes a lot longer to do. You can smash out a snake draft in perhaps 50 minutes. An auction draft, you might be there an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on how long or how many players in the draft, how big your player pool is, how many people in it, how often people are sort of bidding back against each other, all that sort of stuff. It takes quite a while, an auction draft. But in terms of it working, it's clearly the best option. Another issue with it in terms of logistics is you've got to make sure everyone's there to do it. Some software, I know like the ESPN software, if a person isn't there, it will auto-bid for players, but it really takes a lot of the fun out of it. I know that if they're not there in a snake draft, it will take an auto-pick of the player, but it's not the same as in an auction draft. So you really need to make sure everyone's there. And if you're in a league who is competitive and everyone wants to win, everyone's should be there anyway. So always try and make the league at a time when everybody can participate. And an auction draft, if you haven't done it before, please, I suggest doing it. It is, I can't say 100 times better, but it's significantly better than a snake draft. Everything changed. And the good thing about it is, as well, is, okay, you can't say, oh, Kevin Durant's going to go for $60, because it depends on so many factors, when he gets nominated, what other money's gone off the board. So prices are quite variable. So you can have an idea and prepare yourself going in, which you have to do, but things can go not necessarily out the window, but they can change really, really quickly as the draft progresses. Now, some other questions we'll talk about here. Dean Vasic on Twitter, at Dean Vasic. Pretty straightforward question. Are the Knicks mental? They somehow got a great deal in getting rid of Hardaway, and yet they are looking to sign Aflalo. Dean, I'm pretty sure anyone who listens to this podcast is aware of my feelings on Tim Hardaway and on Aaron Aflalo, and you're right, it was a great deal to get rid of Hardaway. I am not a massive fan of Aaron Aflalo. That's an understatement, but it's all rumors at this point, Dean. If they do go ahead and sign him, that is not an ideal situation. He was putrid in Portland, whether he was starting or coming off the bench. He was not good in Denver. He's just not a good basketball player anymore. He was obviously a lot better in Denver than what he was in Portland, but he's just not good anymore. Now, the Knicks aren't going to be good, but if he's signing for over $10 million a year, that is a criminal waste of money, in my opinion. We just have to wait and see. Owen Daly, who's on Twitter, at Owen_Daly, with Luol Deng opting in, what's your best educated guess on who's getting minutes for the Heat next year? Now, this obviously depends on the situation with Dwayne Wade, but I would imagine that Wade would get his minutes, Deng gets his 32 minutes or so, Justice Winslow gets 24 to 25 minutes, James Ennis gets some minutes there at the 2 and the 3 as well. Deng can play some small ball 4 also. say, I think you'd see Ennis getting maybe 15 to 16 minutes. I really liked Ennis as a potential dynasty breakout guy this season, not to a top 200 level, but a guy in a deep dynasty league that would have an increased impact. With Justice Winslow around, it's probably unlikely that he does that, because Winslow is going to be soaking up those minutes that Ennis may have gotten. So I don't really love it in that situation. But look, I imagine if Deng and Wade both come back, which we know Deng is already, and Wade is there again, their minutes are going to be the same. Winslow is not going to overtake Deng as the starting small forward this season. And I think you'd be shocked to see how many rookies actually play significant roles on good teams. Only one rookie played a significant role on a good team last year, and that was Nikola Mirotic. I think only two or three rookies played 30 minutes a night. One of them was Andrew Wiggins, who played a crazy amount of minutes at 36. Alfred Payton got there at 30 at the end, and I think the other wasn't Mirotic. I don't even know if there was another one, but may have been Nerlens Noel, but they just got to 30 minutes. So it's not an easy thing for rookies to do, to have big minutes, especially on a good team, which the Heat, they want to be a good team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. William Sue on Twitter, at @WilliamSue_, what are your feelings on Joel Embiid's latest so-called setback for a keeper league? Is he less enticing with Jahlil there too? Well, obviously it's an issue if it proves to be correct. I think that you might be able to get him in a bit of a discount in Dynasty and Keeper Leagues, but when he plays, he projects to be a very, very good player. Jahlil, not so much. He'll be a good offensive player, but overall his fantasy game doesn't look that great. No blocks really, no steals, poor free throw percentage, no three-pointers. He's going to be a guy who's going to have a definite ceiling placed on him. I think Embiid is still the better dynasty prospect than what Okafor is, but you're right, it makes Embiid slightly less appealing with Okafor there just because of the three big men. How long does that situation last for, where the three of them are there? It's weird. It's weird to work out what Philadelphia is going to do with those big men, but I'm not pushing the panic button on Embiid in keeper leagues at this point until we hear anything more, which apparently we're going to hear some more in a month. I'm just treating things as we have been treating them so far, and assuming that he is going to start playing at some point in November or December this season. Any other questions that we need to talk about here? Let's have a look. Yep, John Gross Didier on Twitter, at John Gross Didier. Who's more boring to own, Avery Bradley or Luol Deng? Deng. He's horrible to own in a fantasy league. He's not a good fantasy player at all. Did not have a good season. The last two or three seasons has not been very good whatsoever. The rest of the questions we've got here are related to these sort of breakout players, so I'll cover them towards the end of the podcast. Let's get into talking about what's actually happening with these guys, and not necessarily what's actually happening, but who do I think is going to be the breakout guy, a guy that you might be able to target. I'm obviously not 100% sure. Everyone who's going to do those sort of things, because then I'd be a fantasy basketball god and I'd be able to predict everything, which I'm not. Let's look at some guys who I think have got a great opportunity to do it. And the where we look at these, when we look at these sort of areas of guys to improve, the way that I look at it is it's generally players heading into their third year or players heading into their fourth year. So guys who are going to be playing the last season of their rookie year, like Draymond, like Jimmy Butler last season, and guys playing in their third year in the NBA. Now, I did a podcast last week, which you can check out, when I talked about the 2014 NBA draft class. So I've covered all those guys. Those guys you naturally expect to have a pretty big increase. And you see from guys not being fantasy relevant to becoming fantasy relevant between their first and second season. So I'm going to avoid talking about those guys here. What I want to cover is the guys in their third and fourth seasons and see which of these guys can really start to jump up. Now, I'm probably going to mention 10 or 15 names here. They're not all going to become top 20 or top 30 players. That's pretty clear. And there's a couple of obvious ones to get out of the way first. Rudy Gobert, who came in ranked 48th in head-to-head leagues last season per game, he's going to be better than that. He was a 13th ranked player post-All-Star break. Maybe that's a little bit high, but he's going to go... Someone's going to want to take him in the second round, and he's going to go before pick 25. That's obvious. Andre Drummond as well, heading into his fourth season. He was 20th in per game value next year. He could easily be a top 10 player. He was 14th post All-Star break. without Greg Monroe there, with someone like Ersan Ilyasova spacing the floor, more rebounds for Drummond, hopefully a better field goal percentage from him as well, I see that his value rises up as well. But they're pretty obvious ones. And it goes without saying that in a Roto League, you don't want anything to do with Andre Drummond. He was 168th ranked player in Roto Leagues post All-Star break, 14th in head-to-head. That's a very big, very big differential. A guy you've probably heard me talk about before, and this is not a big leap, is Victor Oladipo, who ended last season 45th per game, but was 20th in the post-All-Star break. I think that he can definitely be a guy between the 20s and 30s, but that's not a huge jump in terms of his value. Let's talk about the guys who might take a significant jump. There are a couple of guys who, one guy I want to talk about in particular that isn't a second-year player, a third or fourth year player, and that's Danilo Gallinari of the Denver Nuggets. He battled injuries for basically the first 3 months of last season. He was 117th in head-to-head per game value last year. Post All-Star break, 27th, 19th in Roto Leagues post All-Star. That is a significant difference. That is it's not even significant. It is massive. He was the seventh ranked player in Roto Leagues in April. Gallinari, Denver. We heard about them tearing it down. So it all depends on sort of where he goes, but he's set for a big, big jump. Now, I don't know if everyone's going to be on board with that. I don't know what ADP data is going to be like when it comes out. But Gallinari, to me, is a guy that should comfortably finish within the top 60 next season. Comfortably. I would have absolutely no doubt about that being the case. Let's talk about some of these young guys now, because I've been banging on about this is the age group to target. Brad Beal is probably my number one guy that I want to look at here. He finished the season 88th in head-to-head value, 68th in roto value, and he can be a guy who can jump into the top 40. I think he's got as good a chance as any of these guys to have that big leap. He had a fantastic playoff series, fantastic playoffs in general against the Raptors and against the Hawks. He was fantastic, and he's growing. He's young. He's not an old player by any chance. Came out as a freshman. The only problem I have with him is the leg, the stress fractures in his leg, which is concerning. He's had that injury so many times. But I think that he is a significant guy to break out. And when all the ADP data comes out, I've got no problem taking Beal two or three spots ahead of that. He increased his three-pointing, his scoring, rebounding, assists. He got steals. His percentages were okay. I think he can be that Jimmy Butler type of player. He's the guy that, if I'm looking at any of these players, he's the one. He's the main one. Giannis Antetokounmpo is another guy who we know that everybody loves. Ranked 95th in head-to-head per game value, 58th in roto. He's got to add a three-point shot to his game to really take it up another level. He's a chance. He's definitely a pretty big chance heading into his third season to jump up and become a real fantasy force inside the top 50. It's not as much of a sure thing to me as what Beal is, but I think that he's got a tremendous chance at doing that. A guy that I think we underrate is Ben McLemore. He's heading into his third season. We know the mess that is Sacramento. They could make moves all throughout the offseason. That could muck up a few things. He was 142nd in his head-to-head per game value for the season, but in April, he was 49th, and he really started to get things going. He can score. He's a really good rebounder. He hits threes. His steal numbers they're not ideal, and his percentages in general aren't ideal. Not his free throws are okay, but his field goal percentage is not great, but it was 44, so it's not terrible. It's not horrible in terms of numbers. And I think that evidenced by what he did at the end of last season, he can have a big jump. So I really think that he's a guy who's going to step it up as well, and he should be a comfortable top 100 guy next season. Probably not a top 50, but there's a chance of that happening. Alex Len, a guy that I was really big on last season, I think that he's got a ton of value. The Suns are committed to him as their starting center. Assuming he goes injury-free throughout this preseason, I reckon we see a massive breakout for him. He was 132nd in head-to-head leagues last season per game. I think that easily gets within the top 100 and could push himself into the top 60. So he's a guy that I'm really, really looking forward to seeing after a full preseason. Kelly Olynyk is a guy that I'm generally way higher on than what other people are. He was 158 for head-to-head, 90 for roto. He just needs the playing time to me to really get it. And that's the thing that worries me. There's a chance that he doesn't, and I'd be taking a flyer on him in the last round of 10 and 12 team league draft, just hoping that he gets that chance, because he can be a guy who could be potentially a top 50 player. In December, he was the 73rd ranked player in head-to-head leagues, 46th in roto, and that's where he can be. And I think that's definitely something that he can pull off. he just needs the opportunity. And he was getting sort of jerked around by Brad Stevens in terms of his minutes there, and that's what's going to keep him away from that sort of position. Mason Plumlee, this is a pretty obvious one. He's gone to a much better situation in Portland. Unlikely Robin Lopez is back. He'll be the starter. When he was the starter in January, he was the 43rd ranked player in head-to-head leagues. When Brook Lopez was out, he was 60th in December. That's where he can be. And as a starter, he can be a double-digit rebound guy, a massively high field goal percentage guy. He's not a great blocks player, but I think he should get 1 to 1.5 score, rebound, just that decent production. Now, it's not going to give you, top 30 sort of value because he doesn't do enough in other categories, but he can be a bulk rebounder, a pretty decent scorer, and a huge field goal percentage boost guy. Just be aware you're going to have to take on some pretty significant free throw percentage hits. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, maybe a bit of a weird one. He had a really good finish to the season. He was 186th and 159th in his head-to-head and roto games, respectively. Post-All-Star, 109-94. It's a pretty big jump. Charlotte's changed their roster around significantly. There's a number of different pieces in there. He is a cornerstone of it, though. He's an elite defender. He is going to put up... No, he's not going to put up. He's going to be on the court because he's going to be there to shut down the other team. But what he was doing is getting more rebounds. His field goal percentage has risen significantly. He's never going to hit threes. But what he needs to do is translate his elite defense into elite defensive numbers in terms of, does he start getting blocks? Does he start getting steals? And if that comes, and I think it will, we could see a big rise from Kidd-Gilchrist. Probably not into the top 40, but easily into the top 70 or 80. Myers Leonard, much like Mason Plumlee, heading into Portland, which they'll likely be without LaMarcus Aldridge, so he will most likely get the start, and he can be a significant factor. In April, he was the 86th roto player, 102 in head-to-head, and he could be a top 60 player if Aldridge leaves. He's a great shooter, a 50-40-90 guy last year, 50 field goal, 43-pointer, 90 free throws. It's incredible. He can rebound. He hits threes, obviously. He can score. He can block some shots. He could be a significant fantasy guy, and he's a guy that you're definitely going to, assuming it all plays out the way we think it's going to play out in Toronto, he's a guy that is going to be able to put up, I think, some pretty significant numbers, assuming he gets that role, and that's the way it's headed at the moment. Terrence Ross is a guy who had a stinker. He was terrible last season, but he battled ankle injuries, and part of my theory, one of my working theories with fantasy basketball is guys who suffer injuries and play through injuries, it really affects them. Jimmy Butler in 2013-14 had ankle injuries and it plagued him all season. And let's be honest, he was not good. He was really, really average. Got healthy, had a massive, monstrous season, and look what happened to him. Now, I'm not saying Ross is Jimmy Butler, but there's not much competition for Terrence Ross on the wing in Toronto at this point. Lou Williams might leave as well. They've already got rid of General Grievous Vasquez. Someone's going to have to step up. Ross could do it. We know he can hit threes. He's not a bad rebounder. He can score. His percentages, they need to go up, and he needs to start working on some steals. But for a guy who finished 236 in head-to-head value, he could quite comfortably be a top 70 player if everything goes right. And that's probably not someone that I'm going to be looking to draft at the end of drafts, but if he starts off the season hot, I think there's a lot to like there with him. Two other names that are well down the list in terms of last year's rankings, Otto Porter at 301, CJ McCollum at 303. Both guys could very easily step into starting roles next season. Porter, if Paul Pierce leaves, or even if Paul Pierce doesn't leave, we saw Porter put up big numbers in the playoffs as a guy getting 30 minutes off the bench. If you've listened to me for any length of time, you know how much I've loved Otto Porter for a long time. He can score, hit threes, get steals, get rebounds. I think there's a lot to like about him fantasy-wise. He could easily have a top 60 type of season. And CJ McCollum, well, in April, when Aflalo was struggling with the injury, 65th in head-to-head leagues for CJ McCollum, 40th in roto leagues in April. He was even better in the playoffs. Wes Matthews is probably gone. Nick Batum's out of there. Gerald Henderson is crap. There's a big role for McCollum. He'll play backup point. He'll play some shooting guard. He'll probably play a six-man role, but that doesn't mean he's not going to get 30 minutes. And I think that he has got, for a guy that ranked 303rd last season and then took it to in April as 65th, we could be seeing a guy that puts up numbers and really shocks us and finishes with a better ranking than that top 60 value, potentially. He's someone who, him and Porter should both be drafted in all standard leagues next year, but there's a big chance that they well exceed that sort of level that they put up the year before, which is obviously not hard considering they weren't great. Now, let's head Well, let's not head. Let's talk about some of these questions that you guys sent through regarding this. Okay. Barry Baker, the podcast question maker, at BarryBaker8664 on Twitter. Andrew Wiggins or Lord Alfred Payton? It's very straightforward to me. That's Wiggins. Now, Payton was a better fantasy prospect than Wiggins last season. Now, I said I've talked about the rookies on a separate podcast that I did last week, so you can check that one out. But Payton is always going to be limited by his inability to hit threes, by his poor field goal percentage and his poor free throw percentage, although both of those percentages did improve at the end of the season. He's never going to be a big scorer. Wiggins, on the other hand, has the ability to be a top 20 player maybe next season. I think that's probably a stretch, and I'm sure he's going to be overdrafted next season because Andrew Wiggins, for as good as he was, and he was Rookie of the Year, he wasn't a great fantasy player. He was good at times, but the overall Andrew Wiggins experience, it wasn't positive from fantasy owners throughout the whole season. And I know that, and that's the case with nearly all rookies. There are times when you like using them, but for him, per game, head-to-head, 129th. And that's not that good. But January, 69th. February, 67th. April 41st, they're big, and his roto values are even better. He was 83rd in per game roto, 29th in April, 67th in February, 30th in January, when he was getting big minutes. But I'm cautious because they're the times when nobody was playing for the Timberwolves. Kevin Martin was out, Ricky Rubio was out, Nikola Pekovic was out. There was no one there getting minutes. Now, Pekovic, we can pretty much discount. Rubio's back. Tyus Jones is there. Kevin Martin is still there. Karl Anthony Towns is now there. Not that that really impacts Wiggins, but it's still someone else who's going to get touches. I don't think that Wiggins is going to finish as the 129th player in head-to-head leagues, and I do think that he'll probably be a top 50 guy next year, and he'll be significantly ahead of Alfred Payton. I just don't know if he's going to jump to the maybe the 30s where people will look to grab him. Vivek on Twitter at VP90244. Dieng will break out this year. What round is good value? 8th round and later. That's Gorgui Dieng. I don't know why I said Dieng. That's Gorgui Dieng. He will break out. Will he? I think he was pretty good last year. And that's not saying that he won't have a better season, but we have to remember there is a lot of people that he's coming up against. He's coming up against a lot of decent players. He was 51st in head-to-head per game value last year, 50th in roto value. I don't see how you're breaking out more than that. That's pretty good to me. That's already pretty solid. Now, the problem with him is Karl Anthony Towns is there. Now, I would imagine, this is how I would do it if I was running the Timberwolves. I don't like Nikola Pekovic, so I'd be starting Dieng and I'd be starting Towns. They can, Dieng show that he can hit some outside shots. Towns definitely can hit some outside shots. I would start both of those guys and let them work and show some versatility between the four and the five. I think that's the best way that the Timberwolves have got to do it. Pekovic has just had another surgery on his Achilles. He's got the ankle problems. If he plays, he's going to play, 20 minutes? Kevin Garnett's going to play 15 minutes. There's still minutes there, obviously. Adrian Payne, Anthony Bennett. Justin Hamilton is around as well. There's a number of guys there that it might limit Dieng's ability. So, eighth round is pretty much fair enough, but he well exceeded that value last season, so you might not be able to get Gorgui Dieng at that point. And I'm a little bit concerned with everybody else back into the fray here in Minnesota, like Towns, maybe Bennett has a better season, that he might not actually approach that value where he was 39th in post-All-Star head-to-head rankings. That's really high. I don't know if he's going to be back to that sort of level next season with Towns there. I would definitely be targeting later than the eighth round. Daniel Grizzlack at Fasketball.com. Is Danny Green going to repeat? Well, I don't know. We need to know where he's going to go first. I think if he heads back to San Antonio, then he'll pretty much do what he does. He'll shoot threes, he'll get rebounds, he'll block a ton of shots for a shooting guard, he'll get steals. He'll shoot a really high free throw percentage. If he goes to another team, I'll have to wait and see when he does go to that other team. Gary Payton High School at Carl Creel Sports. Let's try again. Carl Creel Sports. That's better. Carl Creel Sports on Twitter. What's your outlook on Middleton? Is he going to have a Butler or Draymond type of year? Light. Well, This is very similar to the Gorgie Jeng situation. Chris Middleton was ranked 76th in head-to-head per game value and 49th in roto value last year, 58th and 40th post All-Star break. He had some significantly big months, and a lot of that was fueled by the steals. Now, I don't think that the steals are necessarily fake by any stretch, but there was no Jabari Parker, and he really started to come on when Parker went down. In November, he was the 207th ranked player in head-to-head leagues. December, 118th. Jabari Parker went down, 38th, 34th, 59th, 53rd over the last 4 months of the season. That's a big difference. Now, Ersan Ilyasova is gone. That's true. And you'd think that Middleton is going to start at the 3 or the 2. So Middleton maybe at the 2, Giannis at the 3, and Jabari at the 4. That's probably most likely. But it's going to be hard for me to see Middleton getting better than what he was last season. Yeah, he deserves a big contract because he was great, and he's a pretty good, pretty decent NBA player. Better than decent. He's a good NBA player. But does he get into the top 30? I would be really doubtful, because so much more of the ball is going to have to go to, it's going to have to go to Jabari Parker next season. And it just, I'm not convinced that Middleton has a better season than last season. So that's something to keep an eye on. I think that does it for today's podcast. Now, just a quick reminder, free agency starting soon, so I'm going to be definitely doing free agency recaps. I was going to be recapping the draft in more detail in terms of talking about each individual player. I am still going to do that, but I was thinking about it. If I do it now, I can go on and talk about these players and say, yeah, Stanley Johnson in Detroit, he's going to have 30 minutes as a starting small forward. Next minute, the Pistons signed 3 small forwards, and then he's reduced to a very limited role. So I'm going to wait to do that until most of the free agency stuff has settled down, and then I'll get into the draft picks in more detail when we can actually sort of get an idea of what their role is going to be. But the one thing I throw out there for all you guys in dynasty leagues who are doing rookie drafts and you're trying to get a guy to compete this year, rookies don't matter. They don't contribute much in NBA teams. There was only one guy I had inside my top 100 last season. There was only a couple inside the top 150, and especially for the first couple of months of the season. And for you guys in redraft draft leagues, you pretty much need to avoid rookies. Now, Karl-Anthony Towns, Emmanuel Mudiay, D'Angelo Russell, these guys all project, and Jill Okafor to an extent, all project to have, you know, on my primary look at things, values inside the top 120. But they're nearly invariably going to go 10 or 20 picks before you probably should take them. And the first 2 months, you're going to have to suffer through some really poor numbers. So some, you know, numbers outside the top 150. And then you might see them for the last 2 months put up numbers inside the top 60. But it depends. Can you hold on to these guys and waste that early draft pick and hold on to them for those first couple of months when they're not providing anything? And that's generally, I think in all my leagues last year, apart from a dynasty league that I was in, or even then, I drafted Jabari Parker in one league. Didn't work out too well for me, and I drafted Jordan Clarkson in the other one. I think they were the only rookies that I drafted across all 10 leagues that I was in. 10-team leagues, 12-team leagues, 16-team leagues, 20-team leagues, 30-team leagues. I drafted two rookies across all of those, I think, 10 or 11 leagues that I was in. And that's the general way that I want to look at things, because rookies just don't contribute. They really kick on in the second year, and the third and fourth years when these players really start to improve what they're doing. And even those names that I threw out, you're going to see someone who I didn't even talk about come out of nowhere and start putting up numbers where it becomes crazy. Isaiah Cannon's a guy to watch for in Philadelphia. They do need point guards. He is one of those. And in April, Isaiah Cannon, you wouldn't believe that he was the 6th ranked player in head-to-head leagues in April. 6th. Doesn't seem right, but in head-to-head leagues for April, Isaiah Cannon was that guy. So just remember that when you're looking at rookies, and if you're in a dynasty league and you're looking for someone to contribute straight away, don't expect too much out of rookies. They just don't do very much, and that's not their fault. It is partially their fault, but it's because of the way that the NBA is set up with the talent influxes. They just don't get a big role, and that impacts fantasy leagues. But obviously, dynasty, you're looking to draft toward the future. All right, guys, that's it for today's podcast. Make sure you are subscribing on iTunes. You're subscribing on Stitcher. You're subscribing on YouTube. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all those sort of areas. It's always very important to help grow the podcast. I do appreciate when everybody does that. Let's try that again. And if you've got any ideas for any shows that you want me to do throughout the off season, let me know. Send me an email, tweet, Facebook message, whatever. If you've got anything you want me to talk about specifically on these shows, please let me know and I'll be happy to do it. I am going to cover those rookies in more detail once free agency settles down. And then when free agency kicks off, I'm going to be doing podcasts on the free agent signings as well. Thank you so much for listening. And for those of you who are watching on YouTube, thank you so much for watching. See ya.